Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Narration by George podcast, the podcast on audiobooks, spiritual ideas, and other items of interest. I'm George Taylor, and welcome to podcast number 76, Otherworldly Adventures, number 3. In the past 2 weeks, we've looked at otherworldly adventures involving characters set in otherworldly places. There was the dystopian future of Seasons of Change, set here in the South, involving characters seeking freedom. There is the future with the entire Earth wrapped in a cataclysm of destruction from an evil force. In The Destined, we meet and see how those main characters counter that destructive force. But what if we have an everyday, modern United States world in which the main character is otherworldly? This presents a whole new set of issues, doesn't it? How does this character survive in this world? How does the world react to him? Would this character be dangerous or benign? I've produced a pair of books in which these questions are answered. Nighthawk and Nighthawk Vanishing Shadows by Jerry Minshew tell the story of an ordinary young man named Michael. He's an orphan searching for his family. He is enlisted in the Air Force, and like all young men, he's interested in furthering his career, finding romance, etc., etc., etc. Then an unusual occurrence changes his life. Michael was a mile into his 2-mile run. At least he thought it was a mile. His mind was so preoccupied with the events of the day that it found it difficult to concentrate on breathing and counting laps. He rounded the north end of the track so that he was facing an open field. Across the field were the BX commissary and the base chapel. Passing in front of these buildings was a patrol vehicle with its red and blue lights flashing. To the right of the BX in the base housing area was another patrol vehicle with its lights flashing. He looked to his left and saw an additional patrol vehicle with its lights flashing. He wondered what was going on. He'd seen several F-4 Phantoms taking off a little while earlier. He'd assumed that they were running night exercises. Perhaps the security police were participating. He stopped running and started walking with his hands on his hips, sucking in deep breaths of fresh air. Suddenly, the alert whistle began to blow. It must be a base-wide alert. Technically, he could be considered on leave until midnight, but he decided that he was here, he may as well respond. A thunderous noise overhead caught his attention. He looked up to see the exhaust flames of 2 F-4s streak overhead, turn upward, and climb into the night sky. One of them peeled away to the east, and the other peeled away to the south. Then he saw another light, higher in the sky. He thought at first that it was the plume of a third jet. Then he realized that this flame was not moving away, but coming closer. He exclaimed aloud, "Oh no, this is the real thing." He started running. He had to get to his barracks, get into uniform, and report for duty. Looking back over his shoulder, he saw that the 2 F-4s had looped around. One of them fired a missile. He stopped running and watched. The other jet fired a missile. Then the strangest thing happened. The target made an evasive maneuver just as the first missile appeared to have been deflected by an invisible force shield. The target made another evasive maneuver, and the second missile was deflected into the desert. Michael watched with amazement until he realized that the target had changed its course. It was now headed directly for the athletic field. He turned and ran, faster than he had ever thought possible. The adrenaline pumping through his body removed any fatigue or pain. His very life depended on getting as far away from the athletic field as possible. The last sound that he heard was what sounded like a sonic boom. He felt the force of the explosion against his body. It lifted him off the ground. The flames engulfed him in intense heat, and he lost consciousness. Eric awoke with a start when he heard the alert siren blowing. He looked at the clock. He had only been asleep for a few minutes. Crawling out of bed, he said, "This is a crazy time for a drill." He checked the top bunk. It was empty. Michael was probably still jogging. He started getting dressed in his green fatigues. He heard someone running down the corridor, knocking on doors and yelling, "Alert! Alert!
Someone said, "Hey, man, I just got in off the street." Someone else yelled, "Yeah, and you're going back out onto the street." Eric pulled his boots on and zipped them up. He grabbed his hat from the dresser, ran out of the door, joining others who were scrambling from their rooms. He expected to see Michael running towards the room. Sure, he was technically on leave until midnight, but if he knew Michael, he'd respond and do his job. Buck Sergeant Harrison was walking through the hallway, yelling, "Come on, let's go! This is not a drill!" Eric stopped him. "What do you mean, this isn't a drill?" "I don't know, man. All I know is that F-4s have been scrambled. I think somebody fired a missile on us. Report to post immediately." Sergeant Harrison moved on down the corridor, shouting. Eric rushed to the door at the end of the hall, opened it, and went out onto the third floor landing. There were two other airmen standing there looking into the night sky. He walked to the rail and looked out. Across the street were the base chow hall and another row of barracks. Beyond the barracks was the base gym. Eric looked up just in time to see a fiery ball streak through the sky. It hit the ground beyond the base gym and exploded. Flames leapt high into the sky. Even at this distance, Eric felt the shock wave. The realization of the location of Ground Zero hit him. He whispered, "Michael." Then he yelled, "Michael!" He ran down the three flights of stairs, across the street, between two barracks, across another street, and around behind the base gym. Two patrol cars had stopped, and a crowd was beginning to gather. They were all looking at the crater that had been the athletic field. One of the SPs was talking on his radio. "I can't tell how deep the crater is without closer examination, but its approximate diameter is 90 to 100 yards. Eric said to one of the other SPs, "Have you seen Michael?"
"Who?"
"Sergeant Weber. Have you seen him? He was out here jogging."
"I haven't seen him."
Eric started to run towards the crater, but two other SPs stopped him.
"Hey, hold up, Zavo. You can't go out there. It's radioactive."
"Oh, yeah? Well, my friend's out there. I'm going to get him."
A fire truck pulled up to the scene, and Eric ran to it. One of the firemen jumped off the back, and Eric said, "Have you got an extra coat, gloves, and mask?"
"Yeah."
The fireman opened a compartment and said, "Help yourself." He and the other fireman started pulling hoses off the truck, and Eric donned a jacket, gloves, oxygen mask, and an air tank. He ran back over to the patrol vehicle, got a radio and a flashlight. He ran to the edge of the crater, looked down, and stared in amazement. He saw a cloud of light swirling around the crater, inches from the ground. The color of the lights alternated from green to purple to blue to yellow and back again. As the cloud moved over the ground, tiny beams of light shot up from the ground and merged with the cloud. Eric looked down and to the right. He saw Michael's body lying about 25 feet away, about halfway down the side of the crater. He yelled, "Michael!" He ran to his side and called over the radio. "Sergeant Zavo to all units. I need a medical team inside the crater. I've got a man down." Looking at his friend put a lump in his throat and a knot in the pit of his stomach. Michael's body was burned almost beyond recognition. "Come on, Michael, you can't die on me. You're supposed to be Captain Kirk. He never dies. It's always the guy in the red shirt that dies. I'm supposed to be lying there right now, not you." The swirling cataclysm of colored lights continued to move around the crater, growing larger and larger as it went. In a matter of seconds, the cloud engulfed Eric and Michael. Eric watched as hundreds of tiny beams of light shot into Michael's body. The medical team ran to the crater with a stretcher. They stopped at the edge. Although they wore protective suits, they were reluctant to enter the crater, which was quickly filling with a gaseous cloud of shimmering lights. One member of the team held a Geiger counter that rapidly clicked. He looked at the gauge. "The needle's maxed out. The radiation level here is tremendous." The cloud stopped swirling around the crater and began to spiral upward. The diameter grew narrower. It stretched upward, reaching into the night sky, gaining in momentum and altitude until it was out of sight. The crowd watched in awe. The medical team was reminded of their mission when they heard Eric yelling, "Hey, you guys, down here!" They carried the stretcher down to where Eric knelt over Michael. The medic with the Geiger counter passed it over Michael's burned body. "The radiation level is nearly 100 millirems. We have to get him out of here." The six of them carefully picked Michael up, put him on the stretcher, and carried him to the waiting ambulance. The ambulance had been isolated. A group of SPs formed a human barricade to prevent anyone without protective clothing from getting through. They put him into the rear of the ambulance, and Eric and one medic got in. The driver, also wearing a radiation suit, never got out of the vehicle. He waited for the signal to move out. Someone in a radiation suit got into the passenger side and said, "Let's go." The driver pulled the ambulance off the grassy area onto the pavement and drove to an intersection. He turned his right signal on, but the person in the passenger seat said, "The other way." "What do you mean? The hospital's to the right." The passenger said, "I'm General Eaton. I'm ordering you to turn left." The driver said, "Yes, sir." He turned left and drove around the end of the flight line and out into the desert. General Eaton said, "Okay, now step on it. Place we're going to is about 45 miles out." "Yes, sir." The general keyed the mic on his radio. "Eaton to Fairchild." "Fairchild, go ahead." "Have you contacted Redcom to let them know that they're having guests?" "Yes, sir. You're all cleared." 10-4. "Eaton out."
Such an encounter creates changes in Michael, changes he discovers when he is led to a gym.
Following a hearty breakfast, Michael was escorted to an exercise room. He was familiar with the exercise and strength training equipment in the base gymnasium. This equipment was similar, except that it had wires and gauges hooked up to it. Kelly said, "First, I want to check your heart rate and endurance, so how about if we put you on the treadmill? I'm going to hook up some monitors to you, so why don't you take your shirt off?" Michael slipped his sweatshirt over his head. Kelly noticed the piece of tape on his left arm. "By the way, I usually don't like for my patients to remove their own IVs. Let me look at that." She took his arm and removed the piece of tape. "That's amazing. There's no evidence that a needle was ever there. For the average person, it usually takes a couple of days for needle marks to heal." She looked into Michael's face and he said, "Believe me, doctor, I'm as surprised as you." Howard said, "Well, let's see what other surprises you have in store for us. Why don't you step onto the treadmill?" Once he was standing on the treadmill, his doctors wrapped a 6-inch wide belt around his waist. Then they taped electrodes to his arms, chest, and forehead. The belt and electrodes were attached via wires to a large console that was beside the treadmill. The console, in turn, was attached to a large computer that stood against the wall. They started the treadmill, and Michael began to walk. The treadmill gradually increased its speed from walking to jogging and then to running. As he ran, Michael watched the three doctors. Kelly sat at the console watching a graph being printed out. Christopher and Howard walked back and forth between the computer and the console, checking gauges and occasionally making notes on clipboards held in their hand. 20 minutes into his run, Christopher said, "Okay, Michael, you can stop now. How do you feel?"
"I feel great. How far did I just run?"
10 miles.
"No way. I usually run 2 miles a couple of times a week, but that's my max. There's no way I just ran 10 miles. You'd have to carry me out of here on a stretcher."
Kelly said, "These instruments are correct. You've just run 10 miles in 20 minutes. Your respiratory and heart rate are indicative of an average person of your age and weight who has run 1 mile. Your stamina seems to have increased by a factor of 20.
Michael exclaimed, "How? What's happened to me?"
Howard said, "All in due time, Michael. Right now, let's run some more tests. Do you feel up to lifting some weights?" Michael released a frustrated breath and said, "Yeah, okay. Let's get this over with." He followed the three doctors to a strength training machine. Christopher motioned for him to lie down on the padded bench. He took the handles of a set of weights in his hands. Christopher moved a pin and moved it down lower. He said, "Okay, see if you can lift these weights." While he lifted the weights, his muscles strained slightly. After 10 repetitions, Christopher said, "Okay, stop. How much do you think you just lifted?"
"Oh, about 50 pounds.
Howard said, "Would you believe 300 pounds? Michael jumped up from the bench and checked the weights himself.
"No way. That's impossible. With a lot of sweat, I can bench press maybe 200 pounds.
Christopher walked around to the other side of the machine and said, "Come around here. Let's see how much strength you have in your legs." Michael stood fast and said,
"No,
No more circus tricks until you tell me what's happened to me. How can I do these things, and what are you afraid that I'm going to infect someone else with? Kelly said, He's right. It's his body, and he has a right to know. Howard said, Michael, we are familiar with four types of radiation. Do you know what those are?
Sure. We studied about them in high school. I think they're alpha, beta, gamma, and neutron.
That's correct. The satellite which crashed and injured you contained what we now believe was an alien organism. This organism somehow generated a radiation previously unknown to us. For the time being, we're calling it Epsilon. Some of these microscopic organisms entered your bloodstream and began to multiply. They've had a dramatic effect on your body. In the past, uncontrolled high levels of radiation have had disastrous effects on human, plant, and animal life. However, in your case, this Epsilon radiation has made dramatic improvements. The truth is, we don't know if it's the radiation that's done this to you or if it's the alien organism itself.
Michael listened carefully as Howard spoke. He was unaware that across the room, behind a two-way mirror inset into the wall, Colonel Gates and Dr. Leonard Brzezinski had been watching. Colonel Gates turned and walked towards the door, and Leonard followed. Outside the room, Leonard said, This is the most amazing thing I have ever seen. I'm sure that the ramifications of having a soldier with Michael's enhanced abilities hasn't escaped your attention, Colonel. Changing the subject, Colonel Gates said,
It's past your bedtime, isn't it?
Actually, I'm off duty tonight, so I thought I'd drive into town and do some shopping.
Walking away, Brad said,
Be careful that you don't fall asleep behind the wheel.
Brad disappeared around the corner as Leonard said,
Thank you. I'll be careful.
A few minutes later, Brad walked into his spacious office and sat down at his big oak desk. He flipped through his Rolodex until he found a telephone number. He picked up the telephone receiver and dialed the number on the card. After two rings, a voice at the other end said,
Lieutenant Colonel Hardy speaking.
Don, this is Brad Gates.
Colonel Gates, it's good to hear from you again. How are things in the land of enchantment?
Beautiful as always. How would you like to take a trip out here?
You know me. I never turn down an opportunity to get out of the office. What's the occasion?
I've got a young man out here that I think you'd like to meet.
And that leads to changes in his Air Force duties. In no time, he's aboard a plane with his unit headed to Southeast Asia. And as he departs, he has a conversation with his best friend, Eric.
Michael led him to a place far enough away from any listening ears.
This is where I leave you, buddy.
Why? Where are you going?
That's something that I can't tell you just yet.
Why not?
Because I've been recruited for a top-secret assignment.
Top-secret? Not so loud, please. You see, being at RADCOM gave me an opportunity to meet certain people. I went through a barrage of tests for them, and as a result, I've been given an opportunity to work with Air Force Special Ops.
Are you kidding? Man, what a deal. But what's Special Ops doing in Thailand?
Like I said, I can't tell you.
Eric gazed into Michael's eyes.
You're not telling me everything, are you?
Michael laughed. The nature of the term top secret means that I can't tell you everything.
You're going to NAM, aren't you?
What part of I can't tell you do you not understand?
Promise me that you'll be careful.
Of course. But you're talking to a guy that survived a joking satellite falling out of the sky on top of him.
Eric laughed.
I guess you're right. Somebody else is obviously looking out for you.
I can't for the life of me figure out why, but I think you're right. They shook hands, and Michael said,
I'll be in touch when I can. Right now I got a big favor to ask of you.
He opened his rucksack and took out some letters.
Can you mail these for me?
Sure, but promise me this. Now that you're one of the elite, don't forget your old buddy Eric.
You have my word on that, but you need to know something.
What's that?
Your bus is leaving.
Eric jerked around and exclaimed, Oh, man, I gotta go! He started running with his duffel bag over his shoulder. He looked back at Michael and yelled, See you later, buddy! He caught up with the bus and started pounding on it with his free hand, yelling, Hey, hold up, wait for me! Laughing and shaking his head, Michael watched Eric chase the bus. Once he was on board and the bus had pulled away, Michael started looking around. Colonel Gates had said that someone would make contact with him. In a matter of seconds, an Air Force blue sedan pulled up. A major got out of the rear seat. Michael saluted, and the major said,
"Nighthawk?"
"Yes, sir."
"How old are you?"
"I'll soon be 20, sir."
"We weren't expecting someone quite so young."
"I'm sorry to disappoint you, sir, but I'm sure that I can do this job."
"What makes you so sure?"
"Colonel Gates believes in me. The President of the United States apparently believes in me. I figure that they're pretty smart."
"I guess I can't argue without denouncing the Commander-in-Chief, can I?"
"Actually, sir, there is only one thing that you can't say about the President."
"What's that?"
"I can't say it, sir."
The Major laughed. "You're confident, and you have a sense of humor. I like that. I'm Major Matheson. People call me M&M, but just between you and me, they don't call me that to my face. I'm not supposed to know about it. Let's go for a ride."
So just what kind of a mission is he on? Take a listen.
Ming's father fell down the creek bank and rolled into the shallow water where he lay motionless. Michael looked back to the scene of the murder and whispered, "Oh, no." Ming began to cry, and Michael put his hand over her mouth. She allowed him to pull her body close to his. He lay there holding her shaking body, blaming himself. Surely there was something that he could have done to have saved her father's life. He wasn't sure how long they lay there before he heard the sound of people rushing through the jungle. He looked up and through tear-filled eyes saw a handful of Viet Cong soldiers with AK-47s trained on them. They were both bound with ropes and led at gunpoint across the creek into the village. A woman, weeping, ran from a hooch and threw her arms around Ming. A soldier grabbed her, threw her to the ground, and kicked her. Ming screamed, "Do not hurt her!" Michael and Ming were pushed along and led to a hooch in the center of the village. The man in uniform stood waiting for them. Michael's hands were lashed to support beams over his head. Ming was pushed into a chair that sat against a wall. The man in uniform slowly approached him.
"I do not believe that we have been properly introduced," Michael said. "You don't know me, but I know who you are. You're Colonel Tim. You're a murderer, a tyrant, and a butcher." Tim smiled. "If your intention was to intimidate me with that remark, you have failed. Now you can tell me three things. Who are you? Where is your unit? And how many men are in your unit?
And I warn you, do not give me that name, rank, and cell number," Michael interrupted.
"I'll tell you who I am. I'm the man who's going to avenge the people that you have murdered today." Tim laughed.
"You speak boldly for one who is at my mercy. Do you not know that I hold your life in my hands?"
"You sound like an educated man."
"I was educated in Europe."
"Have you ever read the Bible?"
"I am familiar with it. What is your point?"
"I was just thinking of what Jesus said to Pontius Pilate. You have no power except that which has been given to you. I remain your prisoner only as long as I choose to do so." Tim drew a knife from his sheath on his hip. He stabbed the sharp blade into the support beam where Michael's hands were lashed. The 9-inch blade missed his hand by a fraction of an inch.
"I grow weary of your games. Is this your feeble attempt at humor, or is it insolence, or maybe you are just stupid?"
He stepped back away from Michael, nodded to the VC soldier standing guard. The soldier slammed the butt of his AK-47 into Michael's stomach. He groaned with pain. Tim said,
"I could torture you. However, to the credit of the American spirit, I have found you to be a people who are resistant to torture. But I know your weakness. When it comes to watching innocent ones suffer, that is a different story. You have two choices. You can either tell me what I want to know."
He started caressing Ming's face with the back of his hand.
"Or you can watch me kill this girl."
He drew a saber from his sheath on his left hip. He poised as if to strike. Michael closed his eyes and said,
"Okay, wait. Put your sword away, and I'll talk."
Tim replaced the saber in its sheath. He stepped closer to Michael.
"That is better. I'm listening."
While Michael had been bantering with Tim, he had also been concentrating his thoughts on the ropes that bound his hands to the support beams. He now had them loose enough to make his move. He opened his eyes.
"I didn't really like either of your options. I'd like to propose a third option.
How about if you burn in hell? Tim slapped him in the face and rushed back across the room to Ming's side. He grabbed her hair and yanked her head back. How about you watch me kill her? After his face was slapped, Michael closed his eyes and focused all of his attention on the ropes. He had to momentarily block Ming out of his mind. Tim screamed in anger, "Open your eyes! Look at me!" The ropes fell away and Michael's hands were free. The two guards standing to either side of him opened their mouths and eyes in amazement. Michael took advantage of their stupor. It was time to make use of the brief martial arts training he had received from Major Chow. The palm of his right hand reached out with fierce speed and force. It connected with the guard's nose. The bone cracked, and the guard fell unconscious. Michael's left foot rose and sunk deep into the second guard's stomach. He dropped his AK-47, bent almost double, and flew backwards into the wall. He fell to the floor, motionless. Tim was shocked at the scene unfolding before him. Two of his guards had already fallen, leaving two by the door. They stood in awe of what they had just seen. Perhaps this American was a demon. Tim yelled, "Shoot him!" Michael turned to them with both hands outstretched and eyes closed. If he was going to survive this, he had to stay focused. Before they could pull their triggers, their weapons leapt from their hands and flew through the air into the hands of this American demon. Michael caught the weapons and opened his eyes. He threw the weapons into a corner of the room. A dismayed Tim yelled, "Kill him!" The guards rushed Michael, and Tim grabbed Ming. He pulled her from the chair and threw her to the floor. He reached for his saber. Michael leapt into the air and twisted while raising his right leg straight out. His foot connected with the side of an approaching guard's face. His head spun around, neck and jawbone cracked. His limp body fell to the floor and rolled to a stop against the wall. With cat-like agility, Michael landed on the floor. He jumped again and thrust his left leg up and out. He connected with the final guard's chest. The guard flew backward across the room and out the open window. Michael landed and turned to Tim and Ming. Ming was crouched on the floor with her knees bent under her and her head down. Tim held his saber with both hands over his head, ready to strike. Michael threw his hand out toward the knife stuck into the support beam. It flew out of the beam and into his hand. He flipped it, catching it by the blade, and threw it across the room. The 9-inch blade buried deep into Tim's chest. Tim released his grip on the saber. It fell toward Ming's head. With lightning speed, Michael rushed to her side and caught the saber inches from her neck. He helped her up, and through her tear-filled eyes, she looked at Tim lying on the floor. "I still alive?" Michael smiled. "You're very much alive." Ming hugged him. Tim's eyes opened. With strained breath, he asked, "Who are you?" Michael answered, "They call me Nighthawk."
So you want to hear more, right? Well, you'll have to check the website for this book for another sample or two, or just go ahead and buy the book. You'll find links for purchasing this book and its sequel, Nighthawk and Nighthawk Vanishing Shadows. They're from Audible.com or the iTunes Store. If you're not an Audible subscriber, if you become one, your first audiobook is a freebie. Why not Nighthawk? Just go to my website, narrationbygeorge.com/books. Click on the link at the top of the page for this book to find the links that I have mentioned, both for samples and for purchasing. Well, you know, I think I'm worn out from all the spycraft and fighting today, so I'm going to close the podcast. I invite you to check my Facebook page where I am Narration by George. Like this page if you will. Maybe you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Narration by Geo over there. Message me in either place or from my website, narrationbygeorge.com. Click on the Contact Me link. Well, that's our time for today. Check back again next week when this podcast will once again be new. In the meantime, remember, God has blessed you. Share that blessing with someone else.